and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. Before you continue listening, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review to help more people find us. I am your host, Sophie. You might have missed me in the last two episodes, but I'm back behind the mic today.
Hello.
Thank you. Albeit with a cold, so excuse me if I'm sniffling in the background. And in today's episode, coinciding with Spoorloos, or The Vanishing by George Sluiser, being back in cinemas, we will dive deep into the history of Dutch cinema to see what has come before and explore what's next. To do this with me, I am joined, of course, by Kiriko.
Hello.
Tom.
Hello.
And Hugo.
Hey, what's up?
And as always, before we jump into that, I want to ask you what we have been watching lately.
I can be very brief about it because I saw Fucking Amal today again by Lucas Moodysson to coincide with the interview for the podcast I did today with the director. It's a 1998 film, which is very sweet and very funny and playful. And it's getting re-released in the Netherlands coinciding with Pride Month. And it's also playing in Lab's Pride film program. And it was a very fun conversation today as well.
That's really nice. What was the title again?
Fucking Amal. It's about this very small place in Sweden, this very small town, and the kids just being bored and fed up with the place, but also having their, you know, teenage angst troubles, like falling in love and that kind of stuff.
All right. And what makes this film part of the Pride program?
There's two girls who are falling in love with each other, and that's done in a very sweet way that it doesn't really matter that much that they're girls, but they of course have to, you know, find the courage to be out to their classmates, and there's a lot of gossip and a lot of, you know, oh, are you in love with this boy, are you in love with that boy, and that kind of stuff. So there's that kind of tension in the film, but it's done in a very non-problematic and very cutesy kind of way.
What about you, Kiriko?
Well, the last film that I saw that left a huge impression on me was Spoorloos, which I, for the first time,
what
watched.
A coincidence.
I watched it. I ran out of the cinema like 40 minutes ago. So I'm saving my deep impression for our conversation after this. But I recently also saw a 2010 documentary, which also goes along the theme of today, which is called Nederwiet, which is a Dutch documentary by Hans Pol and Mike Krijgsman, which is a film that where the two directors research the weed industry in the Netherlands. And they do this by illegally growing weed in their own house and sort of like following the process of how to sell that weed. And then through that way, they get in touch with coffee shops, but also they tag along with cops who are like breaking into houses where weed is grown illegally. It's a very funny and also interesting film.
This gives a whole new sort of dimension to don't get high on your own supply.
Yes, very much so. Yes.
What about you, Tom?
Last Friday, we had one of my friends wanted to log his 2000th Letterboxd log. So he invited me and Laura, a friend of the show, to see my own Private Idaho here in Lab with a big group. I saw my own Private Idaho, which I had never seen before, really.
Damn.
Yeah. It's funny because it's I don't want to talk about it too long. Everybody knows it's River Phoenix, Keanu Reeves,
so hot.
Gay prostitutes. Yeah, just vibing. It's such a vibey movie that a lot happens and not a lot happens at the same time, and then it suddenly turns into Henry V. And but shout out to Udo Kier and his performance as Hans. Wow, what the hell?
You want to be my friend?
Yeah.
My name is Hans. I'm from Germany. And now I live in America, selling pieces for cars.
Mm-hmm.
Say, why don't you get in?
Yeah.
I take you wherever you want to go.
I actually haven't seen this film either.
Well, when you'll be amazed by Udo Kier.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. Actually, the last film that I saw with Keanu Reeves in it was John Wick 4. And I was so surprised by how bad his acting was, which, and I said that to my brother and he said, well, he's always been bad at acting. Is that true?
Well, the funny thing is, in my own private hideo, you still feel that whoa kind of way that he acts, like, yeah. And it hasn't really ever changed, I guess. I mean, he has become a bit more, he looks serious in John Wick.
He but does.
Doesn't
but
really mean a lot.
It
or
doesn't.
Something.
No.
I don't know. I don't think he is an amazing actor. He, by all accounts, he does seem to be an amazing human being in real life.
He does.
I think we need to move this conversation on, because otherwise I'm going to start reclaiming Constantine as a lost masterpiece.
Hey, but I completely agree. I completely agree.
Talking about bad acting, I've been in a bit of a film watching slump lately. I've been watching more TV shows and only really bad ones and really bad films as well. Because sometimes you just need that.
You're
I think.
Your fast food era.
I'm in my fast food era, yeah. So I think the last film that I saw apart from Spoilers was The Fall Guy, which is now in theaters.
Oh,
with,
I haven't seen that. Is it any fun?
With Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. It was very fun. It was extremely chaotic and a mess and not a film that you should go to watch great cinema. But it was just so fun, like in the
but
most
do they
fun
have good
way.
Chemistry?
yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Sure.
Is it a rom-com?
Yes. So it's about a stunt guy that kind of disappears from the stunt scene because he has an injury, and then he comes back and he wants to. The director is his ex-girlfriend, and he wants to win her back while at the same time there's this really big sort of murder plot unfolding that he has to solve. Wild. But it's really funny because it really doesn't take itself serious, and as sort of an ode to the stunt guy, I had a lot of fun watching it. And Ryan Gosling, either behind the wheel or wanting to go to the beach, is always great.
He's got two modes now. He's
yes.
like either the guy from Drive or he's Ken. Yeah,
yeah,
someone
but
he needs to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
In this film, he wanted both. He was both behind a wheel and he wanted to go to the beach. So it's all you need.
Quintessential.
Yeah,
he's a talented king.
Absolutely. All right.
Is Dutch cinema better than we think? Sure, our country is small and we produce a lot of productive romantic comedies. And even when something exceptionally does get made, you tend to hear the all too familiar critique. Do we talk like that? I don't like this film. Surely we don't talk like that. The Dutch expression, just act normal, that's crazy enough, a remnant of our Protestant history perhaps, is felt in every aspect of Dutch film culture. In the past, this has led us to cut down anything and anybody who stuck their head above the grain. Paul Verhoeven gave us iconic moments like Rutger Hauer and Monique van de Ven riding their bike through Amsterdam in Turkish delight, but we made him leave the country to pursue a career in America. Marlene Gorris, even after winning an Academy Award in 1995 for Antonia's Line, left the industry altogether. We are not great at celebrating our heroes when they're still alive. But with George Sluiser's The Vanishing back in cinema, one of the best Dutch films ever made, and according to Stanley Kubrick, the most terrifying film he'd ever seen, now is a good time to celebrate Dutch cinema and the brave filmmakers who tried to push against the grain. From the absurdism of Alex van Warmerdam or the uncompromising genre films of Dick Maas, or even the Dutch documentary tradition that our country has been internationally known for. It's time to explore the films that have shaped this tiny poached stamp we call home.
Bravo.
Grazie.
Also to the Dutch film.
Bravo to Dutch cinema. So, yeah, the thing that I always go back to is this expression, the act normal, you're crazy enough thing, that really annoys me about Dutch culture in general, is that for some reason we don't like it when people or art is going above the grain. It needs to be chopped down. We'd like to know, please stay calm, don't do anything crazy. And for some reason, when I look at my own job, I find it interesting that when I try to screen Dutch films, and thank God, Spoorloos now is very an exception. A lot of people are actually seeing that because it's one of the few films that in our history, our sort of Dutch cinema history, has made its mark. And maybe it's due to this stupid Stanley Kubrick quote that's now constantly on the poster and constantly said everywhere.
We needed that.
It's the movie that really scared Stanley Kubrick. We needed that. We needed somebody else to say something about our own shit. Because we, for some reason, can't do it.
What if Stanley Kubrick is just very easily frightened? And he's like, oh my God, this is crazy. Oh, this is the most scary film I've ever seen. Exactly.
What do you mean? The Shining isn't scary. Sparlos, that's really scary shit.
But yeah, no, it definitely helps. Of course, that's...
I don't know. Let's explore that. This a bit like let me start off with a very funny anecdote. Years ago, I saw The Story of Film. It's this documentary by Mark Cousins. Yeah. He's originally a film critic, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he made a documentary and it's, I think, 12 hours long. And in it, with this very specific Mark Cousins accent, he describes every continent and almost every country, really, and their film culture.
Do you watch movies to be sped up? Or dazzled, or to see anew? Our extraordinary times have brought us exceptional films. Movies that are not just making history, they're making our history. They're showing us who we are, what we want, what we fear, what we have lost. And what we're still willing to fight for. Every generation has its stories. This is the story of us.
Wild.
And it's amazing. Cool. Yeah. It's very nice.
The Story of Film?
The Story of Film. Yeah. Yeah. Well, write it down.
12 hours doesn't even sound that long then.
It's like cut up in episodes. Country. It's like 10 episodes or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I think somewhere along those lines. And you learn so much from it because there's like, this is how I discovered Sembene and films like Tukibuki and stuff like that, which I had never known of. But at some point he arrives at Holland, at the Netherlands, and it says that segment is like 2 minutes.
Oh no.
And it's every time I think of that, I'm starting to think of like, okay, so... I mean, there are things that we did, right, that left their mark. And I'm very much aware that our country is super small. So it would be really strange if we have this massive influence on film culture.
What did he mention, though, in those 2 minutes?
So what he mentioned was Joris Evans, mm-hmm. which people outside of Holland always go to. He's the documentarian that... You probably know this better. This is 40s, 50s?
Yeah, 40s and 50s. Yeah. And he started making a lot of films on the Soviet Union and started working within the Soviet film system as well. Was super fascinated by that, by Russian directors, these formalists that made experimental films. And yeah, within the nonfiction tradition, he's one of the legends for sure. Yeah.
But he wasn't working in the Netherlands.
Oh, yeah, he did make a lot of films in the early days in the Netherlands.
But he also moved.
Like, he went to the Soviet Union.
And then we thought he was sus. And
The Soviet films are super interesting, actually. Yeah.
And then...
The Dutch ones not.
No, they are, but okay. Like everybody didn't like them in the Netherlands, the Soviet films, because there was like, oh, this is so suspicious, he's a communist. Mm. But they're super nice.
What's interesting, I will say, about what Cousins discusses is that he, for instance, discusses Franz Weiss, who in the 60s made a film called... are we doing Dutch titles or are we doing English titles?
I really
titles?
Enjoyed your English pronunciation of all the
Dutch stuff.
Dutch
of
the Dutch,
so I'm going to say The Gangster Meisje, but that's just really Dutch.
Oh my God, that film.
Have you seen that?
Yes, I've seen
That's for like something that's made in the 60s. Is it 60s? 50s or 60s?
It's super
That's actually like, wow, this
stuff.
Is Nouvelle Vague kind of shit. But, and then Weiss made a lot of beautiful films that are... In later in life, they're mostly about his own second generational Jewish trauma. He made a whole, I think, almost a quadrilogy of films about a family coping with that Jewish trauma. One is called Polonaise. There are multiple ones. But he's never really, apart from that, like never really noticed outside of our country. And to go back, well, I mean, of course, Cousins talks about Verhoeven, however we want to pronounce his name. I think he's might be the biggest sort of export product that we have in terms of a director that, well, was after us when he made... So here he made Turkish Delight, he made Soldier of Orange, that are all considered like the sort of big classics of Dutch cinema, which are all, by the way, impossible to screen because the producer, for some reason, wants the state to buy his entire back catalog for $2 million. And as long as the state doesn't do that, we can't screen the films. So that's also really strange for an international audience that nobody can actually really get in touch with Dutch cinema culture here because people are just sitting on their rights.
That's really weird.
Yeah, it is really weird, yeah. And I mean, if you get in touch with him, Rob Hauer, the producer, who actually produced so many films in the 70s and 80s and also in the 60s, he asks bizarre sums of money, doesn't really have good prints, but yeah, I mean, nobody gets to see the films due to that. So.
What the fuck?
But I think this is such a good example of the thing I think, Tom, that you're trying to say is that the Dutch are very good at not honoring mm-hmm. the Dutch and not actively helping to shape that history. And I think in a Cinemas Lab 111 or in like the film landscape that we are in now, you see how important it is to actually restore a print and have a good DCP and distribute it. And so that people write about it and think about it again and go watch it and discuss it and share it with friends and talk about it on this podcast, because then suddenly this history comes alive again and it becomes part of the new film culture of a new generation as well. And now there's this inaccessibility that is kind of like baked in, and either it's through commerce or it's through a lack of funds or a lack of interest. And I think that is usually the case, you know, that it's like we should be better at respecting the new generation, but also honoring our elders in the Dutch film history. I have a very specific example, maybe. I was interviewing this director that I very much look up to once in Berlinale. His name is Radu Jude. He now has a film playing this summer in Amsterdam as well called Do Not Expect Too Much from the End of the World, one of my favorite films of the year. He's one of my favorite directors working right now from Romania. And he asked me in the interview, like, where are you from? And I'm from the Netherlands. Oh, the Netherlands, Vincent Monnikendam. And like for many people, if I would say this anecdote, they don't have any idea who the fuck Vincent Monnikendam is. But he's one of the greatest non-fiction filmmakers, I would say, from the Netherlands as well. In general, one of my favorite non-fiction filmmakers. He made a beautiful archival film about the Dutch Indies and the former colonies of the Netherlands in Indonesia called Moeder Douw, The Turtle-like. It's from 1995, I think. And he made a film about Naples called Souls of Naples, I think, from 2005. And he's like the goat, you know, he's the goat. And his work didn't really get screened. People are not really remembering him. And I was recently really like, oh, we should do something with Vincent Monnikendam. And then he finally got a program in ITVA. That's not by my doing. ITVA themselves found an opportunity to do a program around him. And in that same weekend, he passed away of old age. Like he was in his 80s already and quite sick. But then isn't it a waste that these people are, and now there's all these in memoriams for, oh, Vincent Monnikendam, one of the great Dutch film auteurs. Like, well, where's that respect when they were still alive? So I think there's a big part of that there, that the film history, we're cutting ourselves off of it, which is quite important.
Maybe we need to start a campaign where we ask great international directors to just give us one quote on like one funny Dutch film that they saw and that we use as like the primary marketing tool.
We have Stanley Kubrick, we have Radu Jude, you know, who's next? You know, who's next in
line? We just need one quote.
But then still we're asking for external
validation. That's all right. Yeah. That's definitely all right.
Maybe we just need that. I don't know.
Because there is this weird thing, you know, in the film industry as well, that, and it's also a thing with Dutch people that they're like, I'm not going to watch a Dutch film, you know, I could watch anything else. And this is this weird thing, like, so full disclosure, I program a section of the Netherlands Film Festival on the more outer films. It's called the Directors Forum. So whenever I have this conversation with people, they're like, oh, but Dutch films, they suck, right? And I'm like, come to the program, because I can easily put a program at the festival with 10 great films every year. They are there. They're very good, usually. And with a lot of young filmmakers there as well, and they have a lot of things to say. So this lack of interest and this need for external validation is particular.
Yes. I mean, yes, yes. And
yes, and yes.
I agree. There is a lot of, indeed, great Dutch cinema. However, Tom, what you mentioned earlier, this immediate gut feeling when you hear the Dutch language cinema. Yeah. And I don't know, I think it's like something physical that immediately I feel like a strong sense of resistance.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I don't identify with anything that you represent or the words that come out of your mouth, because it feels so plastic and foreign to me.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
First of all, I don't think there's any... I've tried to speak with people about this, not in Dutch, because otherwise I would be nauseous. most people in other cultures don't have this with their own stuff. Kinda, but not as cringe that we have it. I always think of Dutch actor Derek de Lind. If you pronounce his name in the way he acts, you know exactly what the issue is with Dutch acting. Derek de Lind. There's this very nice video of Michiel Romein saying, like, the thing in Dutch cinema is that everybody says the word godverdomme.
Oh, yeah.
Like, God and godverdomme. Ja, godverdomme.
Godverdomme van rooien.
Ben je godverdomme allemaal aan het doen? Schijt, godverdomme, schijt. Ik lik de stront van jou reet.
Ik ben godverdomme stapelstront verliefd op jouw man.
Ik had toch godverdomme nee, nee gezegd niet?
Hij meent het nog ook, godverdomme.
Tuurlijk, om je van me af te pikken.
Godverdomme, zij had me tenminste bereid. Ik ben niet eens Rooms, godverdomme.
Godverdomme, wat voel je me nou?
Ik doe normaal. Ik regel godverdomme alles voor jullie.
Gefeliciteerd hoor, jij hebt jouw Tim gered.
Nou hebben zoveel anderen, heb je daar godverdomme soms wat op tegen?
Godverdomme, wat een tocht en ik heb kanker.
En natuurlijk ben ik bang om dood te gaan.
Je gaat niet dood. Je gaat er godverdomme voor vechten.
Het zijn die klote nazi's, godverdomme.
That supercut is so funny.
That supercut, like, the canon of godverdommes.
Yeah.
So the canon of goddams. That word, also because it features, of course, the typical Dutch G, godverdomme.
You do it very well.
Kiriko, je had het mij moeten vertellen, godverdomme.
This is, yeah, exactly, but there you go. It's this sort of cringy, yeah. So what I do think that... In the way that people, that a lot of acting happens in like these big ass dramas, because I was looking up what are the big films that have been made, and you Dutch films, and you come up with something like De Bankier van het Verzet, Zwart Boek. Acting in all those films still has that thing, right? That very much sort of theater tradition of acting, but then in cinema, we've never made that translation towards naturalism for those kind of films. So it's still there within the acting tradition itself, the way that we act, that some acting is done. That's also the issue. And I think then from that is born a bias that then everything pricks up our ears in such a way that even if it's a very naturalistic film, we start to look at it like... Is that real? Is that good enough? Is that really how we speak? I don't know.
I don't know though. No? Because I just watched Spoorloos, and the film starts with Dutch dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about it has like this immediate resistance feeling. I'm like, oh God, like she's like, waarom zeg je niet dat je van me houdt? So, and I'm like, but then they're on holiday. It's a couple that goes on holiday and they go to France. So on their voyage, they like have to speak. They start speaking like a little bit of French with the people around them or English. And then the moment that the Dutch leaves the room, everything feels fine again. And even the Dutch actors who then speak super bad French are like, it's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the language, I think. Because the acting remains the same.
But isn't that so weird? It's so weird that we're so aware of that, that we're so cringed up.
Okay, so, but then there's one interesting thing, and we should go back to spoilers after all, but
we must.
I find in the recent, you know, years and in the recent 5 years that I've made this selection, the Dutch films that somehow stand out the most and do something very interesting actually fully go away from naturalism and embrace the artifice and embrace film as this construct and then use language in that as well. I think Sweet Dreams of Enes Ilijevic is a very strong example of that. I think Nocturne by Victor van der Valk, friend of the show, who's also in one of the episodes, is a good example of that. Films that really play with the Nederlandse taal, how we pronounce things and how we say things and what kind of implications that have. I think they maybe feel the same and they actually work around it or work with it and use that cringe as a tool because it is a physical reaction and it's apparently quite strong with you, Kiriko, which is something that you can also harness as a filmmaker, right?
Yes.
And which then, because, so it's funny that you mentioned Sweet Dreams because recently there was a study done that there were, I think in the past 5 years, that there was no, and this was presented during the Dutch Film Festival, I believe, there was no Dutch film screened at international festivals, like at big international festivals. Yeah, yeah. And I think that Sweet Dreams was actually an exception because that screened at Locarno last year.
Yeah, we had Milk by Stephanie Cook last year in Venice as well, in the Venice Days section, or in the Giornate, I'm not sure. Yeah, that is the Venice Days section. And also a friend of the show, by the way, and also a great...
Humble brags.
Icons only.
We're collecting all the good new generation of directors here at Celebrating Cinema, but I see a lot of these films and I speak with a lot of these directors that have very high hopes and like some of them, you know, they finish the film and you see them rubbing their hands like, oh, this could go to Cannes, this could go to Locarno. But it's tough. It's the entire world is wanting to go into those festivals. Mm-hmm. And what is true is that, you know, if you look at Cannes, usually those films have this tendency to be naturalistic and then somehow transcend it and become like big cinema with the capital C. And that maybe doesn't suit our culture and our language group and our way of approaching our own world very well. So we have to find different angles, but maybe those don't connect with the selection committees in France, you know? So yeah. I don't find it a very honest benchmark either because I see enough stuff in the Netherlands that I would have loved to see in Cannes and prefer to the stuff that I see in Cannes. So I'm like, if to go back to your question, like, is Dutch film better than we think? I would say wholeheartedly, yes.
Okay, but then I'll also be
devil's advocate, yeah.
Like a Dutch person would pronounce that, the devil's advocate. Yeah. I also sometimes have the feeling that we haven't really found our rut or what we want to do, which is leading to that some films that are being made are quite, in some sense, the same derivative. So we got the derivative, reductive, romantic comedy shit that we make a lot of.
Which every country in the world.
No, exactly. Every country does that. Is that our culture? I fucking hope not. And then I do think that there's also a lot of very samey art house being made. Some of it very good and some of it, you know, fine. But, and again, probably every country has that. But how, and I'm not saying that we should succeed at something or become the country that does that one thing and change cinema forever. But I sometimes wonder if there's not, what is the culture? What are we moving to? Because it used to be, for instance, in the 80s with Verhoeven, it used to be like sex. Oh, they're so naked in Dutch cinema.
Which is also like such a derivative description of what they were actually doing.
Exactly, yeah.
Because they were just dealing with insane modernization and just the shock of a new world.
Yeah.
And for the Dutch, that shock was maybe bigger because it's like, oh, doe niet zo raar.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. We were still wearing, or the Protestants in churches, in villages, in the Bible Belt, women were still wearing these long Protestant skirts.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Rutger Hauer and Monique van de Ven were fucking each other constantly in Turkish Delight.
Yeah.
Whoa, shock.
Whoa, mind is blown. Yeah.
Whoa, summary. Let's take a moment there. Whoa.
But I think I want to go back to Kiriko though, because in the midst of all that, there's a film that now, more than all the other ones for reasons that we discussed, because it's now available and restored and seen again, has really stood the test of time.
Je m'appelle Raymond Le Morne. Je suis sociopathe et claustrophobe. Je n'ai jamais trompé ma femme.
Ah. Gabi, tire-bouchon, s'il te plaît, hein, tire-bouchon.
Ah ah
Mais je m'empresse de vous dire que pour moi, le pire, ce n'est pas tuer.
Wondering what you think of
Absolutely.
Like Spoilers, despite the language shock.
No. So, no, the language shock was just to make a point. I have to say that every cell in my brain that has ever doubted or was dominated by prejudice towards Dutch cinema being bad has been completely taken away by like an intense, honest feeling of love and belief and hope for the Dutch cinema by seeing this film. It was so great.
It's insanely good, right?
Fantastic. Like, I was really motherfucking blown away from, well, yeah, from the moment they stopped speaking Dutch to the end of the film.
They're like, these wisecrackers can speak French.
No, it is so, so good. And it really, it slaps you in the face like every single minute, because you go one direction and the minute after you go another direction, it's...
Dutchman blows waiter's mind by speaking not fluent French.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, it's
I remember seeing it for the first time, and this also shows that I might still be a Protestant. When I saw it for the first time, my first response was, well, that didn't really feel like Dutch cinema.
Oh yeah.
It feels very international.
We have to address this.
He is kind of international, the director.
Yeah,
right?
He's an international director in many ways, but we have to address the un-Dutchly good, on-Hollands goed, which is on-Nederlands goed, which is a thing that people say about stuff that is really good. Oh, it's so good, it can't be Dutch. Which is so lame. Shut the fuck up, dude, really.
They say that about this podcast.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Sophie, you've also seen Spoilers for the first time, right? For
yes.
the occasion of this episode.
I did,
What
yeah.
did you think?
My very first thought was, wow, that was not fun to watch at all. At all. I was very scared because I cannot handle scary films very well. So then when I saw the line that drew me in, that Stanley Kubrick think this is the scariest film ever, I was like, okay, maybe I should invite people to watch this with me because otherwise I cannot sleep. It wasn't actually that scary. I mean, it is, but in a very... different kind of sense, like not the way that you can't sleep at night, but that you just keep thinking, wow, that was
but
really
I will tell you
up.
One thing, the first time when you're with your parents or with your friends and you're driving on the highway and somebody says, let's stop at this gas station, and you get out, you will think about this film and it will become the scariest film ever again.
Yeah,
it fucks probably with your mind.
Yeah, it really fucks with your mind.
I think my experience was probably influenced by the fact that I watched it with my parents, and I watched it with my father, who's a very cynical man and also a psychiatrist. So he was constantly giving commentary of like, oh, this doesn't make sense.
Are those two things related, by the way, the cynicism and the psychiatrist?
I can hear the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme.
This is a recurring theme in my life. Like every time we watch a film, his... view is basically, they should just all die. They deserve it.
Just pure existentialist.
Yes.
What else are we good for? You know?
Like the most innocent thing could be happening. Like, for example, we were watching something a while back where two schoolboys, like they were just like 12 or something, one was bullying the other. And he was saying that the person being bullied, he was like, why is he taking it? He should just die.
What?
This sounds like a guy who watches Seven and goes like, I sympathize with John Doe.
But how are you a psychiatrist if this is the way you think? That's special.
I know. He's a true puzzle, this man. This is the man that I saw John Wick 4 with, you know. Right. He likes these guys.
A lot of people die.
A lot of people die. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. But watching a film like Spoilers with someone next to you who's constantly saying things like, this doesn't make sense. Why would you ever do that? And then also kind of spoiling things along the way. It kind of, makes the experience not as great, but also less scary.
Can somebody do the cliff notes for our listeners, like in a couple of sentences, what the film is about or
without
trying
spoiling
to do
it?
Yeah.
No, you've just seen it.
Oh my
just
God!
Now.
Just
yeah. How are you?
Yeah, you
okay.
Like, immediate reaction.
This. So the film Spoorloos, or what's the English?
The
title?
Vanishing.
The Vanishing is about a Dutch couple, a cute boy and a cute girl who are going on a holiday in somewhere in France, and they're in the car, and already you feel that something's off, but nothing's off. What happens is they stop at a gas station, the girl disappears, and the rest of the film, the man searches for his girl.
Weird. Yeah, it goes deep. Literally.
This is it.
It's literally, it sounds so boring.
The film was for the longest time unavailable on DVD, except, and I find this very funny, on the Criterion Collection in the States. You couldn't get it here, but you could get it in the States.
How ironic.
The summary on the back cover, is I think the shortest the Criterion Collection has ever done, because usually they go like, and the most mesmerizing film that has ever been, George Schleiser's thought-provoking, blah, blah, blah. They intellectualize everything. Yeah. And this does exactly what you just said, because just like we should do right now, they're very aware of the fact you can't spoil anything.
Yeah, I want to...
Beyond this.
I want to...
And now Hugo is going to spoil everything beyond this.
I want to plug a podcast episode from another podcast that I did with a friend of this show, though, Stanislav Lugerzinski, who works for the Imagine Film Festival in the Netherlands. We did a series on some films that were playing in their program, and they played Spoorloos in the last year at their festival. And the entire theme of the podcast and the program that year was the idea of alchemy. And we had two like scholars on as well to discuss Spoorloos in relation to alchemy, and that we concluded it's a film about alchemy, or it's an alchemical text. It's a film that features a lot of stuff that has to do with alchemy. The film itself is a bit of magic as well in a metaphysical sense. There's a lot of these like interesting references to stuff that you completely miss when you're focused on the plot, but there's a lot of like occult kind of like references. The Golden Egg, which is a part of the book in Dutch that it's based on, the Tim Krabbe book, is called Het Gouden Ei, The Golden Egg, which in itself is already a reference to the history of alchemy. And there's a lot of stuff to do with putting stuff in the ground and resurfacing and that kind of stuff, which is also an alchemical process. So there's all of these things. And in a podcast episode, we went very deep into that for an hour long. It's full of spoilers. It's like littered with spoilers. But if people have seen the film and want to dive deeper in that, I can refer them to the Imagine Film Festival podcast on that film, because there's a lot to pick up there. But I think it's safe to... Keep
what?
Let's act as though we've left the room. No.
But I think it's safe to keep this spoiler-free, right?
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should.
How is it a Dutch film? That's something we can discuss. What makes it... Does it have a Dutch vibe?
I'm so sorry to say that I think that it doesn't. As I just said, I would feel very guilty if that is the thing why I like it. Isn't that terrible? I found that just
no. I
horrendous.
Think it does have something Dutch.
Yeah. Okay.
The way
great.
In which
thank
we
God.
Just described the fact that this film is about the like the blame, like the flattest, straightforward plot that you can think of. It has a very, it's very Dutch to me.
Hmm. Yeah.
There's no, like the there's, so, I like the idea that there's like some magic to it, because I definitely did not feel that by any means while watching the film.
I felt it a lot while having that in my mind and revisiting the film. It's a special film.
This is what happens when you get into Pizzagate and the Illuminati and
then
you
suddenly
know,
everything
you start seeing things, Hugo.
It's called the red pill, Tom. You can take it as well.
I was thinking the same thing actually about the soberness, especially because you say now that the film has twists, but it also really doesn't. Because at the same time, the things that happen, you kind of do feel like they're going to happen, but you just hope that they won't.
That's nice. Yeah. They need to put that on the poster.
Right? It's an existential nightmare, you know? And that is,
And it's just extremely straightforward. And in that sense, it's not that scary, but still scary.
And then that is actually what makes it the most terrifying.
Exactly.
Because that's like, the longer you sit with that, the more you're like, oh no, this is awful. this is so bad.
And also, the film essentially is about a man wanting to know the truth.
Yes.
I think that comes very close to the heart of every Dutch man. And that's maybe why Dutch documentaries are so good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are very...
We love
clear
the truth, don't we?
in wanting the truth and
we
going
are very
towards
direct.
It.
Yeah. Like about all the mainstream films, right, that are being made in the Netherlands now, that Tom alluded to, these rom-coms and stuff. I'm seeing this weird sociological thing that they are all obsessed with holidays and vacations. Like Dutch mainstream cinema, everybody wants to go on holidays all the time. Think of like Toscaanse bruiloft, Verliefd op Ibiza, even Costa.
Piste.
Like the list goes on actually. If you look,
this is a very interesting thing, because if you...
Yeah, it is interesting.
Sorry, no, but it is interesting. Come on. This is really interesting. Because this...
That's what he just
said. No, but I love talking about this, because it's so weird about our own culture that we do this, and it's so not necessary. But we...
But that is so Dutch.
We use escapism to the extreme. So when I went to Cannes this year, everybody was really interested to talk to me because... wow, that sounded wonderful. What's a wonderful sentence? Let's put that on my gravestone. Everybody was really interested to talk to him, wasn't he?
Everybody was really interested to talk to me.
Okay. I stuck my head above the grain, didn't I?
Yeah, you're immediately getting punished for it.
Immediately getting punished.
By yourself, also.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh.
Finish your sentence.
Can somebody please bury me alive? Anyway, so when everybody was so interested to talk to me, it was interesting to see that a lot of people, like from outside of Holland,
they were like, "Tom, you're so cool."
Shut up! I'm trying to make a serious
Tom,
point.
Tom, your clothes are so nice. You know so many films.
Oh, well, that's...
No, you
I'm
tell
so
us.
Afraid that he is staying in. No, that I felt that a lot of people thought that Dutch culture was doing very well seeing films from outside their own country. A lot of people go to the cinema here. Like, a lot, way more than in Amsterdam. A lot more people go to the cinema to see films from wherever, but not really from here. And that's really different in France or in Germany or whatever. So we like to see... Other cultures, we're really interested if it's a Polish black and white movie or a French 3-hour movie, whatever. We'd like to see that. But when it comes to our own stuff, and I was speaking to this producer, like a very young producer who was making films, and we're having this discussion, and he said, like, the thing is, we are within the whole chain of making films, very afraid to come to terms with our own culture. We'd like to escape that culture, but not really head on, except for maybe documentaries, try to sort of fictionalize that. And the only person who can kind of do that is Alex van Warmerdam. But that's also a sort of absurdist way of talking about...
Yeah, like I said, reinforcing the artifice.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it becomes so artificial that, whatever. It's okay. But when it becomes too real, I guess, we kind of want to get away from that.
It's funny because my, like, I was thinking of this whole theory, like all Dutch mainstream films are about holidays and vacation and like, oh, what if we can't go camping in France anymore? That kind of stuff. Or what if the wedding doesn't happen in Tuscany? But
what if we can't go camping anymore? Yeah.
Well, that's actually a huge thing for
me.
And then I saw Jim Taiutu's Hardcore Never Dies, a film about like the gabber scene in Rotterdam in the 90s. And that film actually opens with a monologue where this gabber, you know, with the bald head, is sitting in a backyard while a drug deal is happening. And he's giving this huge monologue like, Dutch people, they only want to go on holiday. The only thing they think about is going to Turkey, because only in Turkey they feel alive enough to fuck their wife and this and that. Like, it's a super long, like, filmic cinematic monologue that is exactly making the point that I was also making. I was like, yes, this is right. This is actually what most Dutch films seem to be about. So I think that your point is very good. Retreat into escapism versus people trying to flip that on its head and trying to confront us with a thing through how silly we are and trying to amplify that somehow or something. Maybe that's a key thing about the modern Dutch cinema.
And also the foundation of Dutch history, you know, like all the glory and greatness has been founded by the fact of taking great ships and going all over the place.
Is this maybe then also where this sort of shame is coming from colonialism?
I hope so. It better be.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, it better be. We deserve it.
Maybe that's not the reason, but maybe shame or guilt is something completely baked into our system.
I hardly agree. And actually, you know, I know that Victor van der Valk, friend of the show, was once thinking about making a film about the concept of shame within the Netherlands. And he just said those words and I was immediately so intrigued in what that would look like and to actually use that as the material. So I think that's such a good question, Sophie, because that seems to be so deep in our culture somewhat. And I would be very interested in seeing who can extract that out. And
I would be interested if whatever the we here is, would allow us to get that made.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, it feels like, I mean, with all due respect to Victor, he can't be the first one to actually think about that idea or think about, you know, how we
hasn't Alex come head to heads.
Has he though?
I think he is becoming a little bit more of a absurdist nihilist, so then for him it seems less interesting. Like, if you see his last film, which I really liked and I thought it was kind of like a masterpiece, Nummer 10.
Yeah, that's a great film.
That's a film that ultimately shows this like utter insignificance of everything, semantically almost, you know, every symbol that we produce, every narrative that we have in our head, it just all gets sucked into the void. So I think he's too nihilistic maybe to make that film. Yeah, I think he definitely touches upon it and he definitely shows some aspects of it, but I don't think he's invested enough in that aspect of our human brain or like our identity to really.
Yeah, it's also, I think the way he uses narrative form, or I'm not going to say it maybe in that way, doesn't really maybe allow for it being critique. I'm not sure it necessarily needs to be critical, but. Yeah. Now we're trying to make a film, which
it's not really what we're here for.
No.
Let's stop right there. Don't go too far.
That's your job, Kiko. You make the films.
Oh my God. But maybe I really, one thing that you said earlier about, or either one, someone.
Yeah, we
about
all become the same.
About Dutch people only being able to glorify heroes once they're dead, which is also like a very Dutch thing to do. Like, it's like the Van Gogh syndrome, maybe. Is that then also
that's a
maybe
nice one? Yeah, Van Gogh is like the summum of that.
Is it because the shame falls off immediately when death arrives because you lose responsibility or something?
You're liberated.
There's nobody really there who
there's
can.
There's no competition or something.
Oh yeah, there's no conversation with
Yeah, you don't have to say to Van Gogh, Mr. Van Gogh, you're such a genius. How did you paint the Starry Night?
Because that would be awkward.
Gee, I don't know. I was just so fucking awkward depressed. To say
you're doing something well.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dad.
And then also, once they're dead, someone just becomes this figure that you can project all your own thoughts on.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
nothing
exactly.
comes back anymore. They can't feel you anymore.
What we need to do is take your dad's, Sophie's, philosophy... Apply it to Dutch film culture. Yay! Kill everybody, and then we can celebrate Dutch cinema.
Yes!
That's the solution.
Is perfect. I see this barren,
see
desolate landscape. Dead bodies all around.
To save Dutch cinema, they had to do one thing.
We apply the marketing campaign of asking international directors.
Does this terrify you? And then somebody says, potentially, I'd be quite frightened if I were to be killed because I'm a filmmaker. Put it on the poster.
Directed by Dick Maas posthumously because he's dead.
That's how you get to Cannes, and then everybody wants to talk to you for sure.
But you're dead.
Well,
we're there.
Mic drop. That's a wrap.
Enjoyed this episode and want to hear more about the Dutch documentary.
Yes, we did.
Want to hear more about the Dutch documentary tradition? You can go back to one of the oldest episodes titled Documentary Ethics with Seeds of the Seed director Miriam Goodman.
Friend of the show.
Want to hear more from friends of the show and current Dutch filmmakers? You can listen to the many Future Frames episodes that we did where each of us go into in-depth conversations with Dutch filmmakers working right now. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and share so more people can find us. Make sure to subscribe and stay up to date with all new releases. For any questions, feedback, or requests, contact us at celebratingcinema@lab111.nl and follow us at lab111 on Instagram. As always, we provide show notes, including all films mentioned, at celebratingcinema.com. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmerzaal and artwork by Studio FFF. Thank you.